This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
7-0 to learn more.
Now with part one of the Morning Ag Show, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thank you very much, Randy, and good morning. We'll take a look at your grain futures from Tuesday, which were higher across the board. Corn for September gained 7 3/4 to 348.5. December corn gained 7 1/4 to 361.5. March corn gained 7 1/4 as well to 374.5. Soybeans had the big gain of the day, with September gaining 14 1/4 to 859.25. November beans gained 14 1/4 as well to 872. January beans gained 13 3/4 to 885 3/4. Chicago wheat for September gained 10 cents to 484.5. December wheat gained 7 3/4 to 482.25. March wheat gained 8.5 to 487.5. Moving on to soybean meal, September's contract gained 440 to 292.90. October bean meal gained 390 to 294.30. December bean meal gained 410 to 298.10. Finally, soybean oil for September gained 12 cents to 28.38. October bean oil gained 9 to 28.35. December bean oil gained 8 cents to 28.53. So to recap your grain futures from Tuesday, corn gained 7 to 8, soybeans gained 13 to 14, wheat gained 8 to 10, soybean meal gained 390 to 440, soybean oil gained 8 to 12 cents. Now we'll move on and take you to the Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Tuesday's Cash Grain Report.
This is Tuesday's report of grain price and trends prepared by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Illinois country grain prices were higher on Tuesday afternoon. Yesterday's crop progress report had Illinois corn at 38% good excellent. Last week we were at 46% good excellent. Nationwide, corn was 55% good excellent. Last week at 58% good excellent, and a year ago at 68%. Soybeans in Illinois were 41% good excellent, last week at 46% good excellent. Nationwide, soybeans were 55% good excellent, last week at 55%, and a year ago at 68% good excellent. In northern western Illinois country, grain yields quoted shallow corn bid 7 cents higher, 315 to 358. Soybeans mostly up 13 to 14 cents at 792 to 812. In central Illinois, country grain deals quoted shell corn bid 6 to 8 cents higher, 337 to 370. Soybeans were mostly up 12 to 14 cents at 799 to 850. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were mostly 8 cents higher, 306 to 370. Soybeans were mostly up 8 to 14 cents at 789 to 832. Illinois soybean processor cash soybean bids were 4 to 15 cents higher at 830 to 857. Basis was mixed at 4200 to 1500 in November. High pro soybean meal on the truck basis offered 280 30 to 297 30, up $3.90 a ton, with basis unchanged at 1400 to 300 over the October. Illinois corn processor cash corn bids were 7 cents higher at 362 to 379, with basis unchanged the option to 17 over the December. Illinois River barge loading elevators coated their producer corn bid 7 cents higher, 334 to 362, with basis unchanged at 28 under the option to December. Soybeans ended up 7 to 14 cents at 818 to 824, with basis steady to down 7 at 54 under to 48 under the November. Wheat prices were up 8 cents at 442 to 452, with basis unchanged at 40 under to 30 under the December. East St. Louis barge loading terminals placed their producer corn bids 7 to 9 cents higher at 350 to 351. These elevators raised their soybean prices 7 to 16 cents. Quotations at 832 to 834. Soft wheat closed up 7 cents at 483 to 484. Milo ended the day 8 cents higher at 341 to 342. Contract bids producers for October, November delivery corn in the northern part of the state at 316 to 352, soybeans at 794 to 832. In the central part of the state, corn for October, November delivery at 336 to 357, soybeans at 799 to 855. In the southern part of the state, corn for October, November delivery at 306 to 372, soybeans at 806 to 832. And June-July wheat at 464 to 488. And that concludes our report. This is David Humphreys, the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Moving on to your livestock futures, which were also higher across the board on the Mercantile Exchange. Live cattle for October gained $1.95 to $96.15. December live cattle gained $2.05 to $101.22. February live cattle gained $2.35 to $108.42. Feeder cattle for September gained $1.07 to $133.90. October feeders gained $1.22 to $131.05. November feeders gained $1.90 to $130.70. Finally, lean hogs for October gained 12 cents to $62.72. December lean hogs gained $1.82 to $61.77. February lean hogs gained 87 cents to $69.15. So to recap your livestock futures from Tuesday, live cattle gained $1.95 to $2.35. Feeders gained $1.07 to $1.90. Lean hogs gained 12 cents to $1.82. Now we'll move on and take you back to the Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Tuesday's Cash Livestock Report.
This is the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Tuesday afternoon's Livestock Report. Starting with the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass traded $1.72 lower in a range of 45 to 50-50, with the weighted average carcass price of $48.93. From the Illinois Direct Sow Report, slaughter sow prices were weak, with light to moderate demand for very heavy offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows weighing under 400 pounds traded at $19 to $23, 4 to 5 weighed at $21 to $25, 5 to 6 weighed at $23 to $27, over 600 pounds at $25 to $29. On the Illinois Direct Hog Trade, prices for bears and gilts at the country buying points were weak, with light demand for moderate offerings ranging from $29 to $36. Receipts for Illinois bears and gilts have totaled $21,880. In the direct cattle trade from the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, steers on a dressed basis traded at $157 to $160. Heifers on a live basis traded at $105 and on a dressed basis at $157. From the National Daily Pork Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts was established with 425 loads traded. Calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass was $71.99, which was 8 cents higher. From the National Boxed Beef Cutout Report, values for choice and select beef carcasses were trading lower. Choice carcasses were $225.38, which was $1.57 lower. Select carcasses at $298, which was 94 cents lower. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated at 116,000. Compared to 113,000 for last week and 120,000 for 1 year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 485,000 compared to 473,000 last week and 472,000 1 year ago. That concludes our livestock report. This is Katie Lemonager and the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And that's all for part one of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you this morning by Taylor Tire and Auto of Litchfield and by Farm Credit Illinois. Now with part two of the Morning Ag Show, we join once again Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thank you very much, Randy. And in Ag News for a Wednesday morning, the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced that sign-up for the Wildfire and Hurricane Indemnity Program, or WIP, will begin today. The assistance is designed to help producers recover from natural disasters in 2018 and 2019, including Hurricane Dorian. Richard Fordyce, administrator of the Farm Service Agency, says Congress set aside funds in June of this year to help American farmers in the recovery efforts.
Secretary did announce today the beginning of the disaster bill that was a part of the additional supplemental appropriations for Disaster Relief Act of 2019. This is just a touch over $3 billion that Congress has put toward these recovery efforts, and we are going to begin with the WIP Plus program. The WIP Plus program will be very similar to the WIP program of last year.
The funds will help with recovery efforts from the last 2 years worth of disasters.
These will be for events, weather events, storms from 2018 and 2019. For example, as we all remember, Dorian was in the news last week. Losses from that storm also will be a part of the recovery through the WIP Plus program. Again, WIP Plus, and then some of the language in that legislation refers to on-farm stored commodities, the milk loss program, even a retroactive 2017 WIP that will go back and pick up blueberries and peaches that were damaged by unseasonably cold weather in 2017.
The disaster legislation will include funds on prevent plant recovery. The USDA plans to release those details soon.
There was also a mention of prevent plant in that legislation. Those provisions are not completed yet at this point, but expect to have some announcement on the prevent plant provision of the legislation here very soon. Block grants also were a part of the 2017 WIP. We're currently in conversation with a number of states to look at their block grant proposals. Remember, anything that was a block grant from last year had to cover activity or losses that were not covered under anything else through the WIP Plus program.
Fordyce also talks about who will be eligible for assistance.
Eligibility for WIP Plus will be for producers that are in a county that either had a presidential disaster declaration or a secretarial disaster declaration in the primary county. However, producers that are not in counties that had the presidential or secretarial declaration can also, if they can supply supporting documentation to prove that they were harmed and they did have losses based on the storms covered under this program, that they too would be eligible.
The relief package will include new programs to cover losses for milk dumped or removed from the commercial market, as well as losses of eligible farm-stored commodities due to eligible disaster events. Disaster losses must be a result of hurricanes, floods, tornadoes, typhoons, volcanic activity, snowstorms, or wildfires. You can contact your local FSA office for more information. South Carolina Ag Commissioner Hugh Weathers says it's too early to tell, but it appears it was the same old Hurricane Alley for South Carolina farmers.
Down Hilton Head maybe got passed by the worst of it. We don't know yet about north of Charleston. It's going to be that TD corner of the state that, you know, seems to be in the worst line again.
While damage is still being assessed, North Carolina Department of Agriculture regional agronomist Don Nicholson says conditions are better than they were almost a year ago when Hurricane Florence pounded the Carolinas for days.
Tobacco is tangled up, some leaves on the ground, which are not harvestable at this point. As compared to last year, we were out of the tobacco business after Florence came through. This morning, we're still in the tobacco business.
Nicholson says some other crops may have actually benefited from the hurricane.
There was still some corn in the field. Again, the further east you go, the worse it was. But those guys are really hammering it, trying to get that out of the field as quickly as they can. Cotton, if it was open, there may be some damage to that. But since this, it didn't sit on us for 3 or 4 days like Florence did last year. It got wet. It's now drying out. I think cotton's going to be okay. Actual soybeans, peanuts, and sweet potatoes may benefit from this rain.
Corn has largely been harvested in North Carolina, and cotton appears to have suffered minimal damage as well. In other national ag news, the Department of Agriculture's National Ag Statistics Service is compiling fall reports with surveys underway. Michael Clemens has the full report from Washington.
Farmers and ranchers are encouraged to complete their surveys. Responses to these surveys provide a foundation for crop yield estimates, production practices, and helps set accurate loan rates, disaster payments, and crop insurance price elections. Dan Carestis, USDA NAS Statistics Division Director, says several surveys are underway.
Coming this fall, we're starting off with an September agricultural survey. We'll be going out to farmers and asking them acreage yield and production on their small grains, and we'll be publishing that on September the 30th. And at the same time we're doing that survey, we'll also be asking them about their grain stocks, and grain stocks will be published on the 30th as well. Moving on from there, during the first 2 weeks of September, we're also contacting hog producers across the U.S. and asking them about how much inventory they have on their farm as far as hogs, breeding information, pig crop, and we'll publish that information on September the 27th.
USDA is also conducting the Agricultural Resource Management Survey and County Agricultural Production Surveys.
Our Agricultural Resource Management Survey collects information on chem use for barley, cotton, sorghum, and wheat this year, and also collects information on production practices. That survey actually won't be published till later in May of 2020. And then during the fall, as every year, we work on our county agricultural production surveys. We start off at this time of the year collecting information on barley, wheat, and oats down to the county level, and that gets published in December. And then following up in October, we collect information on row crops, corn, soybeans, cotton, collecting basically the same information, how much is planted, harvested, and yield, and publishing that in 2020.
Carestis says it's important for farmers to respond to the surveys.
This is the one chance for the farmer to really tell us about himself, tell us what's going on out there. It allows NAS to measure what's going on in the industry, and the information that comes from these surveys is used in many different ways. It allows farmers to make good decisions how they should market their information, and at the same time, it allows other people like lawmakers, bankers, analysts to make decisions using the same information that everyone else is using to make decisions that impact producers.
Questionnaires are mailed to many farmers, but surveys can also be completed online.
USDA goes through a process. Typically, we mail out the questionnaires to the producer. We follow up by telephone. Sometimes we follow up with personal enumeration. But there's one thing that we do with all of our surveys now is we make them available online. And that's probably the easiest place for the producer to fill out the questionnaire and get it back to us. In the future, we'd like to have more and more use of online response as we can get.
He says it's important to know that USDA NAS surveys are different than those done by the Farm Service Agency or private organizations.
Most of our surveys are voluntary, but the key thing is that we're selecting a unbiased sample. It's scientific in the way that it's done. The results from our survey, they're unbiased. And it's not connected to any type of payment or reimbursement or anything like that. We're just out there to collect the information and make sure that we get the best information out for the producer to use.
You can find the release schedule of reports online at nas.usda.gov. Following the crop production report release on September 12th, USDA NAS will host a live Twitter chat beginning at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Follow USDA_NAS on Twitter to participate. Michael Clements reporting.
This upcoming Sunday marks the beginning of Farm Safety Week throughout the nation. In this report from the USDA, Rod Bain talks about potential ways that drivers can watch out for farm equipment on roadways this fall and learn ways to avoid a potential accident this harvest season.
Perhaps you are driving in a rush for work on a two-lane rural road when what seems all of a sudden you come upon a slow-moving piece of farm machinery in the same lane as you. You put on the brakes to avoid a rear-end collision.
Let's say the car is traveling 55 miles an hour and you're coming up on a vehicle, another slow-moving car that's going 45 miles an hour. And let's say you're about 400 feet away. You have 27 seconds to close that 400 feet. Well, now let's say that the car is traveling 55 miles an hour, but the vehicle in front of them is only traveling, let's say, 15 miles an hour. It only takes 7 seconds to close that same 400 feet. And even with today's faster farm equipment, it's still only about 13 seconds to close that same distance.
Mike Staten of Michigan State University Extension says in recent years, the number of collisions between farm equipment and motor vehicles on our nation's roadways has increased, with rear-end collisions being one of many factors connected to these types of accidents. Other factors include the terrain on the roadway and how that factors into visibility, the size of the piece of farm equipment, and the increase of traffic for both farm equipment and motor vehicles, as well as the distance each must travel to get to their destinations, such as from field to field or from home to workplace. Now, Staten first and foremost emphasizes both farmers and drivers can do their part to avoid these accidents. But what can you, the driver, do to prevent a collision with traveling farm equipment?
Look for flashing lights. Try to identify farm equipment. Be aware of this difference in closure time and react as soon as you can. And look for slow-moving vehicle signs on the back of the equipment. Should be about in the center of the piece of equipment. Should be 3 to 5 feet off the ground. And it'll be a triangle that's going to have red margins and an orange center. Very universal symbol that it's a slow-moving piece of equipment.
In addition, Staten advises motorists to be patient if they find themselves traveling behind a slow-moving piece of farm equipment.
The tractor operator will know that you're there and will try to pull over when they can. The trouble is some of our shoulders are soft, or there might be obstacles and preventing them from pulling over. So just trust them to pull over when they can and then pass when it's safe.
And if your vehicle is following farm equipment, keep in mind that left-hand turns will be common as this equipment turns into a driveway or farm field.
The motorist that's following them won't be aware of that, so they will run into the tractor as it's turning. So just be aware of that. Look for farm buildings on the left side of the road. Look for the equipment to be slowing down a little bit. Of course, always look for signals.
Either in the way of flashing warning lights or hand signals. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Moving on now into State of Illinois Ag News, we have the latest crop progress and condition report from last week from around the state. For that, we'll join state statistician Mark Sloysener with the National Ag Statistics Service in Springfield.
Cool weather continued across the prairie state last week, and rainfall was below normal as well. Temperatures ranged from slightly above normal to 3 degrees below normal, and the average around the state was 68.8 degrees, and that is 1.8 degrees below normal for this time of year. Rainfall averaged nearly 1/2 inch, which is slightly below normal. There was an average of 5.6 days suitable for field work last week, and topsoil moisture levels were reported as 10% very short, 22 short, 65 adequate, and 3% surplus, which is a little drier than 1 week ago. Growing degree days accumulated since May 1 are above average in southern parts of Illinois, but below normal in central and northern areas. Corn has reached the dough stage on 88% of acres. That compares to 100% 1 year ago and 99% for the 5 year average. Corn in the dense stage reached 53% compared to the 5 year average of 87. 8% of corn acres are now mature compared to 35 normally. The condition of the Illinois corn crop was rated as 21% very poor to poor, 41 fair, and 38% good to excellent, which is a little worse than 1 week ago. The Illinois soybean crop is now setting pods on 90% of acres compared to 100 last year and 99 normally. 3% of soybean acres are turning color compared to 46% normally. The condition of the Illinois soybean crop was reported as 19% very poor to poor, 40 fair, and 41% good to excellent, a little worse than 1 week ago. The third cutting of alfalfa hay is 82% finished compared to 91 normally. Pasture conditions were rated 21% very poor to poor, 42 fair, and 37% good to excellent, and that is also a little worse than 1 week ago. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
In other crop news, on a local scene, the Montgomery County Extension conducted their annual yield survey of the area corn crop last Thursday. The survey data gathered resulted in an estimated countywide average yield of 187.5 bushels per acre, which was down from last year's average of 215.7 bushels per acre. The day began with volunteers meeting at 8 a.m. at the U of I Extension office in Hillsboro, where they broke into groups to survey the crop across the county. Groups then returned back to Hillsboro before noon to share results and enjoy lunch. Volunteers sampled fields in each of the 19 townships of Montgomery County. Results for each township are as follows, with the highest in the county being Bodark at 215. Some others that came in over the 200 mark were Pittman at 205 and Butler Grove at 203. Walshville Township came in at the lowest yield per acre at 168. The countywide average again was 187.5. Volunteers for the survey last Thursday were Mike Bitter, Brian Brown, Tim Hain, Heath Houck, Lisa Klaus, Mark Nodal, Nick Coons, Jim Miller, Jay Neiman, Kevin Neiman, Gabe Osborne, Jay Ryan, Matt Stolte, Terry Trader, and Dr. Talon Beckert, the commercial ag extension educator with the U of I, who compiled the data. Anyone interested in volunteering or sponsoring future yield surveys is asked to contact the Montgomery County Extension Office at 532-3941. And while I personally was a part of that yield survey last Thursday, there were many fields across Montgomery County that are way under mature for this time of year, and millions of acres of corn and beans remain behind that typical rate of maturity around the state as well. For a corn plant to produce the proper amount of kernels of corn that can be harvested and sold to be used as animal feeds, ethanol, or any number of products, those plants must reach a stage referred to as black layer. And right now, there aren't many acres that have done that thus far. Again, we'll join USDA crop statistician Mark Sloysener, who says that only a small percentage of acres have done that compared to prior years.
8% of corn acres are now mature compared to 35 normally.
Illinois soybeans are also well behind typical maturity stages. A cold and wet spring delayed planting for many farmers in Illinois, leading to a historically slow to mature crop. Moving on into Illinois ag weather, the new Illinois state climatologist is on the job, and he's talking drought.
So actually on August 13th was the first U.S. drought monitor map that identified D1 or moderate drought conditions. So there have been abnormally dry conditions, which isn't technically considered drought, throughout much of July, especially from the Quad Cities across that I-74 corridor to Champaign. But that August 13th map was the first one that identified actual drought conditions. And that was actually the first week that droughts had been identified by the U.S. Drought Monitor in Illinois since September of 2018. The last 12 months ending in the month of August have been unprecedented wetness, but we have seen some dryness across especially the central part of the state.
Trent Ford is the new Illinois state climatologist, who started his new job on August 15th. He's a native of Roanoke, Illinois. Moving on into other state ag news, nearly 124,000 people attended the DeCoin State Fair this year, which is up 23% from last year's attendance of just over 100,000 people. The attendance is the highest seen in the last 4 years. The increased attendance allows a key decision by fair officials this year to cut the $2 admission cost, making it free for all to attend. Other indicators also demonstrate the fair's improvements this year. The grandstand saw a 26% increase in ticket sales and a 37% increase in revenue this fair season, generating more than $97,000. The 2020 DeCoin State Fair will run next year from August 28th through September 7th. In local news coming up this weekend, the Staunton FFA alumni will be sponsoring their 13th annual tractor ride on Saturday. The registration will begin Saturday morning at 7. Coffee, juice, water, and donuts will be available. The ride will then leave at 8 a.m. with a quick driver's meeting before with an opening ceremony. The ride will then make a stop for refreshments along the way to Marine, where the tractors will be on display and lunch can be purchased. Orders for lunch will be taken at registration that morning, so it'll be ready upon your arrival. Passengers are also told to not ride on any part of the tractor unless in an approved buddy seat. If you have any questions for this weekend's 13th annual Staunton FFA alumni tractor ride, you can contact Stacy Slifka at 618-781-7435 or chapter reporter Linda Niehaus at 618-402-2710. Also happening this weekend, the Montgomery County 4-H will be holding shooting sports, including archery and air rifles. That'll be this Sunday afternoon from 1:30 to 3 at the 4-H Park in Butler. Also, next Monday, the Extension Office in Hillsboro will be hosting a succulent wreath workshop, Monday, September 16th. If you've ever wondered how to use a succulent in a creative way, this class is for you. Andrew Holsinger will guide you as you create your own wreath with a mix of succulents you can enjoy throughout the holidays. The program, again, will meet at the Montgomery County Extension Office in Hillsboro from 5 to 6:30 on Monday evening. The cost is $20 and includes all materials to create a wreath to take home. Advance registration is required, however, by this Friday, September 13th, by visiting their website, go.illinois.edu/CJMM, or by calling the Extension Office in Hillsboro and contacting Andrew Holsinger at 532-3941. And that just about wraps it up for this Wednesday morning edition of the Ag Show. But remember, if you have any ag news for us, you can email that to us at WSMI@WSMIRadio.com. So for this Wednesday morning, September 11th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting for WSMI Ag News.